Hello, this is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 4th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with an article headline, "No Mayor, No Library Deal After City Council Meeting," and this was written by Allison Petty. The Decatur City Council's path to appointing a new mayor did not begin smoothly. Mayor Mike McElroy's death July 17th left a vacancy that the council must fill by September 14th. Mayor Pro Temp Julie Moore Wolf is serving as the acting mayor, and several residents who spoke during the council meeting Monday said she should be chosen to fill the position until 2017, when the next municipal election occurs. Others expressed a strong desire for the appointment of G.E. Livingston, who came in second to McElroy during the April election, with roughly 36% of the vote. Protesters with "Livingston for Mayor" signs gathered in front of the Decatur Civic Center before the council meeting. "It does not have to be out of the elite six we see before us. We elected you all to represent us, so we would ask that you would please, please take our voices and our consideration into account," said Jacob Jenkins, chairman of the Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. Larry Foster, a former councilman whose term ended in April, said voters supported the direction the city has been going when they elected McElroy. McElroy chose Moore Wolf as mayor pro tem. "I believe Tuna would want us to pull together behind her leadership," Foster said, referring to McElroy by his well-known nickname. "I sat next to him for several years. I know what he thought. I support Julie Moore to be our next mayor." The mayor's chair was covered in black cloth, a visual reminder that the council continued to mourn in its first meeting without him. The packed chambers observed a moment of silence at the start of the meeting, and Moore Wolf read letters of condolence from Decatur's sister cities in Japan and Germany. Adding to the council's already full plate was discussion of the Decatur Public Library's future. The meeting appeared to signal the end of a long brewing plan for the Decatur Public Building Commission to buy the building at 130 North Franklin Street and rent space to both the library and Macon County offices. The council's 40-minute discussion of filling the mayoral vacancy occurred in closed session, but Councilman Pat McDaniel refused to take part. McDaniel said he thought it was disrespectful to talk about filling the post at the first meeting without McElroy. Councilman Jerry Dawson and City Manager Tim Gleason both said that members of McElroy's family expressed no concerns about the process moving forward Monday. Speaking after the closed session, Moore Wolf said the council members who attended did not come to any conclusions. They are slated to meet in another closed session at 5:30 p.m. August 10th. That meeting is not expected to include a dedicated time for public comments. Anyone who wants to express an opinion to the council members should look for their email addresses on the city's website, decaturill.gov, Moore Wolf said. All of the council members have already heard from many residents who are interested in the situation, including the council spot that would open if one of the council members became mayor, she said. "I think we just need a little more time. It'll be nice to have Councilman McDaniel in there. Really, we just need a little bit of a breather, she said. I'm sure we've all been hearing from people for quite some time. During a discussion of the library situation, Gleason reviewed the council's options related to a proposal that was in the works for more than a year and became public in November. Under the plan, the building commission would have purchased the library for $3.1 million. Instead of paying a lump sum, it would have kept the rent flat at $615 annually for 20 years. County offices would have moved into unused space on the library's second floor and its annex building. The Macon County office building at 141 South Main Street would have been sold to 101 Main Place, LLC, with the intended purpose to redevelop the building for residential use. Boards for all three governments had approved the plans in May and June, but Gleason said in May that the council also needed to approve the plan. The council's initial discussion, July 6th, yielded many questions and doubts that the proposal was a win for the city, concerns that continued Monday. Several council members said their biggest concern was $735,000 in city debt related to the library. That amount remains from $5.2 million in general obligation bonds that were issued in 1998 and refinanced in 2010. City officials say the money helped purchase the library, even though the library's Board of Trustees holds the title. Library officials say the funds were used solely to renovate the facility. I can't support what's out there with us owing that kind of money. If that could somehow get negotiated, I would support it, Dawson said. Also, the city's financial statements show the library building as an asset valued at $4.1 million. Gleason said the removal of that asset could hurt the city's bond rating. Gleason presented several options to the council. Accept the deal as presented, do not accept the deal, or move toward the city purchasing the library. He offered pros and cons for each scenario. Though he previously said he would not make a recommendation, Gleason said there were no cons to the city purchasing the library building. Further, he said the city should not pay more than $1. Our taxpayers should not have to pay for the same piece of property twice, he said. According to a memorandum Gleason prepared for the council, pros of the city buying the building include relieving the library of building maintenance challenges, allowing the city to maintain an asset downtown, and a possible cost reduction to relocate, quote, other city operations and or other entities the city provides financial support, end quote. Speaking after the meeting, Gleason said he would talk to the involved parties and see if there were better opportunities for the city. His role up until this point was to gather information, not to negotiate, he said. He acknowledged that the library board would be within its rights not to sell the building to the city. I think the one thing we know cannot happen is some of the building needs, such as the parking lot, cannot go unaddressed, he said. I think another missed opportunity would be not trying to find use for some or all of the unused space. Macon County Chairman Kevin Greenfield, Republican, Decatur, said last month that the deal on the table was the county's one and only offer. Despite that, Gleason assured the council that county officials would be willing to open the door to discussions. Library officials attended the meeting but were not asked to speak. Afterward, the library board president, John Phillips, said the board would not entertain discussions of selling the building to the city. That's not going to happen, particularly for $1, he said. Phillips said he was very disappointed with the council's decision. It's standard procedure to say, "Hey, I'm just going to present the facts and have no opinion," he said. "If anybody thinks that's what happened tonight, I'd like to check their hearing." In other city news, we have this headline: healthcare tech company picks Decatur, plans up to 500 jobs. A healthcare technology solutions and customer service business sees room to grow in Decatur, announcing plans Monday to open a new office in the former Star Tech facility. Convey Health Solutions Incorporated expects to start by employing more than 300 people at the facility in Fairview Plaza. The Florida-based company will provide a mix of permanent, seasonal, full-time, and part-time positions. By the time it reaches full capacity, the employment level could approach 500 jobs, said Jonathan Starr, Convey Health's executive vice president. "We have a lot of hiring to do," Starr said. Decatur stood out for its enthusiasm and engagement for this project. "We were looking for a large enough labor market to support our needs for many years." Starr said Convey Health Solutions was founded in 2001 and provides support for some of the country's most well-known insurance companies. It works to provide information about Medicare prescription drug plans, Medicare Advantage plans, and other provider benefit programs, he said. Its services include helping with insurance enrollment and conducting surveys, Starr said. The company is anticipating having the initial stage of hiring completed and office open by the end of October, Starr said. By moving into what had already been a space for a call center, Starr said the office can be ready soon after signing a lease with minimal investment required. A lease for the space at 1505 West King Street, which had been empty since Star Tech closed its office in 2012, was signed in July, he said. "We can have it up and running within a couple of months," Starr said. The company closely considered five sites, as Starr said Decatur stood out among the others, which were in Georgia, Texas, Arkansas, and Utah. "All of them had some of the elements," Starr said. "Decatur had the most items needed for us." Being in the central time zone was a factor, as Starr said Decatur will add to the company's other locations, including on the East Coast, along with ones in Arizona and the Philippines. Decatur stood out because of its potential to provide employees with the right skills set, Starr said. "The addition will provide a boost to Decatur's job market," said Ryan McCready, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County president. We welcome the additional jobs, and our partners will continue to work cooperatively to ensure a great experience for the company, McCrady said. This is just another sign of how the spirit of collaboration between our partners is making a difference in job attraction, expansion, and retention. Convey Health Solutions has worked closely with the Economic Development Corporation, Richland Community College, Workforce Investment Solutions, and the City of Decatur in its efforts to select a location for its 9th office. The city appreciates the company's commitment to the community, said Julie Moore Wolf, Decatur's mayor pro tem. Convey Health's choice of Decatur as the home for this development represents the latest in a long string of recent economic success stories, Moore Wolf said. We are committed as part of a team of local partners to ensuring the company's future success. A job fair will be held 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. August 11th and 12th at Richland as the company begins filling its job openings. Job seekers can arrive at 9 a.m. to begin the application process. Job seekers should bring copies of their resume, dress professionally, and be prepared for an interview. Richland President Gail Saunders said the college plans to provide the company with support by offering customized training services. She said Richland students will have new job opportunities available after completing the training programs. This article was written by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer. We'll turn now to an article written by Allison Petty, and the headline is DISC Day Campers Deliver for Northeast Community Fund. Kids at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center Day Camp take all kinds of trips during the summer. Scoville Zoo, George's Skate Center, and the Children's Museum of Illinois. On Monday, a group headed for a less recreational destination, the Northeast Community Fund. They were dropping off the 163 non-perishable items accumulated through the camp's two-week food drive. Jerry Peltz, executive director of the Northeast Community Fund, met the children to thank them and answer questions. We have a lot of people in our community who need this kind of help, and we're thankful for people like you, he told them. He explained how the food is distributed and how the ministry is able to purchase food from the Central Illinois Food Bank in Springfield for 19 cents a pound. I think it's pretty cool how cheap it is, how much stuff they have, and how many people they can help, said Tanish Doshi, age 8. Tanish was part of the winning age group of 7 to 10-year-olds who brought in the most cans at 101. That age group also is larger than the younger group of 5 and 6-year-olds and the older group of 11 to 13-year-olds. The winners celebrated with an ice cream party Monday afternoon, but day camp director Kristen Murray reminded the kids that they'd all get ice cream in a few weeks at a camp-wide event. Plus, she said, the reward was not the point of the effort. We all did a really good job bringing food in, and all of this food is going to be very helpful to some families who can't afford groceries, she told the campers for announcing the winner. So, are we going to be sad and pout if we don't win? No, they answered in unison. Murray said later that she appreciated the extra effort from parents to help with bringing in the cans and enjoyed the opportunity to teach the kids about helping others. "I'm so proud of them," she said. Logan Stephanie, 11, said he brought in 7 cans and 3 boxes of macaroni. He was one of the 9 kids who helped deliver the items and said he did not know about the Northeast Community Fund before the visit. "Generosity actually feels good when you're actually doing it," he said. In another education-related item, we have this headline, "Eisenhower Alumni Leave Legacy for New Building," and the writer is Valerie Wells. When Eisenhower High School's class of 1962 graduated, it was the first class to spend a full 4 years in the then-new building. The building was so new that there was not yet any landscaping, and the students decided their gift to the school would be shade trees. "We wanted to do shrubs too, but they were too expensive," said B.A. Butts, a member of that class and a retired teacher and administrator for Decatur Schools, who is on the Decatur School Board. "At the time, of course, we didn't have a clue about our futures, and when the onus came that the new Eisenhower would be created and renovations began, many of those 53-year-old trees were cut down, and it left the campus again barren," he said. "So as a group, we decided, why not go back 53 years and repeat history and do it again?" On August 1st, more than 24 members of the class of 62 dedicated 10 new trees and 2 memorial stones on the grounds of the again new Eisenhower High School. They chose autumn blaze maples, which will be the most colorful in the fall, the same kind of trees they gave their school 53 years ago. "That school meant as much to us as this new school does to students today," Butts said. "We were so proud of Eisenhower, proud to be Eisenhower students, proud to be Panthers." Local members of the class formed a committee and sent out appeals, and donations started coming in, said Judy Newland of Mount Zion. The district's Building and Grounds Department took care of planting them. "All we had to do was pick them out and pay for them," Newland said. Mike Sodaroff, Buildings and Grounds Director, did the rest. One of the memorial stones is dedicated to the memory of Karen Elaine Miller Leintz, the class secretary who coordinated reunions and get-togethers and the monthly ladies' luncheon through the years, who died in August 2014. The other is a memorial to the other 47 members of the 239-strong class who have passed away since graduation. In the early 1960s, Eisenhower and MacArthur each had about 1,800 students, and the original Stephen Decatur, which predated them by more than 40 years, had more than 2,000. In other local news, we have this headline, "New playground coming to Old King's Orchard neighborhood," written by Teresa Churchill. In the 2 years since the Reverend Stacy Brohard became executive director of the Good Samaritan Inn, the only playground developments he's seen in the Old King's Orchard area is the disappearance of aging equipment. "People pull it out for liability reasons," Brohard said. All that is changing, however, with news that the community is invited to come together September 26th to build a playground in the Peace Park behind Old King's Orchard Community Center. This is not just about a metal structure, said Alita Graham, president of the center's board. This is about a place where families can have positive interaction with their children and with each other. It's about social change. Kaboom, a national nonprofit dedicated to bringing balanced and active play to children growing up in poverty, is partnering with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, which is providing $85,000 to build the playground. Graham said the center must raise an $8,500 match for the project to go forward. Children and adults are invited to come to the community center today to give input on the playground's design. Graham said the board hopes a stage can be part of the finished project. The meeting for adults at 5 p.m. is also the first meeting of a planning committee the center is forming to help coordinate the playground build day. Monday's announcement came on the heels of an arrest for arsons Friday that destroyed two detached garages and three vacant houses, all just north of the center. Brohard said, with Mercy Gardens expanding along the west side of Union Street and Peace Park and the playground to the east, the neighborhood is getting an atmosphere upgrade. Mercy Gardens is a horticultural job training program of Decatur is Growing Gardeners, or DIG, and the Good Samaritan Inn. To me, this project is a continuation of what the city has done to improve the downtown. This is just so exciting for the inner city, Graham said. In a sidebar, there is an announcement that there will be a meeting for children at 3 p.m. today for them to talk about their ideas for a new playground. And the meeting for adults is at 5 p.m. with dinner in between. And the meeting is at 815 North Church Street. And to RSVP, you're encouraged to call 217-428-2782 to speak with Alita Graham. In checking other local news, we find that there are no obituaries in today's issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. So we will take that short break now and return with the second half hour of the August 4th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. Please stay tuned.